Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, all, welcome back to a Tuesday, June 28th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Fun show for you guys today. Yeah, we got Blake Murphy of Revenge of the Birds to come on the pod with Evan Swords of 49ers Hub to talk all things NFL. That's what we do at this time each week. So it's great to have a Cardinals perspective contrasting with our Falcons and 49ers perspective each week here on the podcast. But we talked about all kinds of fun stuff in the NFL. Andy Isabella, if he's long for the roster, Kyler, Cliff, the NFC West, the Jimmy G comments on the Edelman appearance on a recent podcast, Debo's future, the Chiefs' unreal 2022 schedule, first coach fired, where the betting odds are there, and all that and more on today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Thank you guys for checking out the pod today. I greatly appreciate it. Make sure, if you're not already, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get your podcasts. Wherever you get your podcasts, guess what? Chase Thomas Podcast is there. So make sure you subscribe to get all of my daily content on that front here on the Chase Thomas Podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Don't forget, you can read me, all my sports writing, over at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type in your email and become a subscriber over there. Sports Renaissance Man, that's me. Go ahead and check that out today. We're on YouTube as the YouTube channel continues to grow. All kinds of great video content, clips, and all that good stuff over on the YouTube page, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. You can email the program, as always, at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at me at Chase_Thomas, and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. I think that's it. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast, the Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, taping this late on a Monday. I am joined by a first-timer, not a first-timer, except on video. We've done a pod in the past, when back in the day, before, I don't know what to call this, BV, before video. Yeah, BV. But Blake Murphy is here. Great Arizona Cardinals writer. He's here to hash it out with Evan Swords and I about the Kyler Murray situation and what's going on in Arizona, because we have some Kyler takes. We want to get some perspective on someone who covers the team every single day at Revenge of the Birds, and a very good website that you should go check out if you do not already. Blake, good evening, sir. How are you?
Doing good, Chase. It's definitely the doldrums of the off season. Glad to be here, at least to talk at least a bit of Cardinals football, since there's, as far as Cardinals fans, for a while it seemed like that there was nothing but new news, and it was not good about pretty much every single week it would go without fail. Definitely been kind of nice for Cardinals fans just to get to take a breath from a lot of the news that we've seen for the most part, and check in with a lot of the other NFL teams, I think, too, around the horn. It's It's going to be a fun upcoming season, especially now I think the Cardinals fans are rejoiced to not have to play Russell Wilson at least more than once a year this year.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. But you might get Baker Mayfield on the docket. We'll see.
Hey.
Drew Lock, Baker Mayfield, whoever it is. But back from his vacation, not tan, Evan Swords. Evan, I was expecting you to be a couple shades
What dark. The f- Wait, first off, I mean, like, I don't know if I have, like, a really HD camera and everything's yeah. white or something like that, but I'm much tanner than I normally am right now.
You're not. No.
I am. Oh, I swear to God I am. Like for
I don't
me,
know, man.
I'm from Portland, Oregon. I like, am a normally, like, pale white.
Yeah.
Like these walls.
Like Blake and I. It seems like I mean, Blake and I are both pretty fair-skinned. We're the fair-skinned gang.
I mean, what I will say is this. I've lived in Los Angeles and Phoenix, yeah. and both times, like, I never was that tan.
I just can't tan. Like, I just, it's not going to happen for me. It's never going to be a natural tan. I think I need to figure out the right self-tanner. That's what I need to do, is just invest in the right one and just try it out. But I'm so terrified it will go, it would just go awry, and I'm just going to be left with a crazy, crazy skin tone. But this is one of the peaks of having a fiance. Like, I want to wait until I get married, and then it's just like I can experiment with whatever. It's like, who cares? I'm locked in. Like, if I mess
there's
up
no
on
rules.
Some tanning, yeah, there's no rules. There's just you can experiment and figure stuff out. You're like, hey, I'm committed.
Why do you think I have a worthless mustache right now? It's literally because I Sarah's here. I don't like.
Yeah.
I came home from Mexico. I was like, I need to shave. And I was like, oh, this seems like a dumb idea, but I've got nobody I need to worry about impressing. Sarah just, so that's
yeah,
the
I thought it was the Top Gun Maverick look. Like, you're going for the goose, you're going for the rooster type of look for the summer. Like, I
no.
thought that was going to doing that whole little dance on the beach.
No,
like,
I have never, never once have I ever had a mustache on purpose or seriously.
Okay.
I literally was, like, shaving last night and was like, oh, I went a little bit lower than I'm normally used to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just it was there. I don't know.
Are you gonna keep it? How does
no,
the
absolutely
how does...
not.
Okay.
I would have shaved it off today, but Sarah made a joke about me looking dumb and I was like, well, I'm stubborn and now
yeah,
you're
going
you, to
look
at it. Yeah,
that was the worst strategy
all day long.
For you. Yeah, there that was not a good move. Blake, how is the what is the heat like? Because I am in East Tennessee, grew up in Georgia, obviously, and very familiar with the humidity and just the unbearable nature. But I have never been to Arizona. What is the difference with Arizona heat? Is it actually hot? Is it the same as LA heat where Evan is? Like, what is it bad? Is it comfortable? Is it overblown? What is the heat like there?
Yeah. See, in Arizona, it's like you get to the weird place where you're like, walk outside, like, oh, it feels cool outside. And then you look at nighttime and you realize it's 95 degrees outside, but it feels cooler because it's like, oh, I have to say it's a dry heat still, like, you know, 105 is 105, and it is 105 right now. So it's not that you lose too much, but I have to say, like, is it better than, you know, when LA gets to 105? Yeah, I think so, because of that humidity. Is it better than Texas? Yes. You can just essentially go from air conditioning to air conditioning, look just as pale as I do, although that maybe my lighting setup is a part of all of that. And then just run outside to go to the pool, at least for the most part, and on those days where it's just too hot. So Arizona, we're a unique bunch here. We decided to build a city in the middle of the desert because we're crazy people and continue to live here. It's probably at least the worth it when I say 8 months of the year.
Yeah,
you're going to get it where it's like 75 and sunny back in January while all the rest of your friends are shoveling snow. Can't shovel sunshine, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I lived in Phoenix for like a year and a half. The one thing that they have on, like, lock is, like, you know, I'm in West L.A., so I'm by the beach 3 miles inland, and, like, nothing was built out here for a lot of, like, high heat, just because it naturally, like, you know, it's usually 70 degrees. Now, global warming, that 70 is now, like, 75, you know, closer. Like, today it was, right now it's, like, 85 degrees. No, it's, like, 80 degrees. What is it? 75 degrees. But like in Phoenix, everywhere you go is air conditioning, you're hop skipping and jumping. If you go to a restaurant that, you know, outside there's misters, like the bars have misters everywhere. Everybody's got a pool. Like, it's different, you know, like it feels like they're like, we know what to expect. We're all very prepared for it. Whereas like here, that's just like, we'll give you a fan and one AC. Like, I've got this AC unit, like, in my bedroom and nothing else anywhere.
There you go. So, give us the best thing about your trip to Mexico. So, Blake, Evan went on a Mexico trip over the last week. He's been away, bouncing around, having a lot of fun. You You went to a wrestling match, a pay-per-view. So, you did that. Like, you were all over the place. You experimented all over the place, man.
So, yeah, we did. So, it was, like, real Mexico. So, we did 8 days in Guadalajara, which is just an incredible city. You know, we did as much as we could do in terms of, like, really experiencing, like, you know, Mexican culture, seeing the city. We did Lucha Libre, which is the wrestling that you were referring to, which was just... as far as wrestling's considered, absolutely terrible from a technique standpoint. But you know what they lack in technique, they had in heart. I'll tell you what. You know, tried all you know as much food as we possibly could. Naturally.
What was the best thing you ate?
Oh, man. So the best thing that I ate, it's hard to say because we did so much, but like we did the best of all of their stuff, right? So like birria tacos, like are from Guadalajara. And it's a very like popular taco where you dip it in like a kind of a soup, if you will. We had like tortas from like one of their most popular tortas restaurants. We had tacos at some of their most popular taco restaurants. You know, we really did it all. But I would definitely say that my favorite thing while I was in Guadalajara was probably what we went there for. And that was, you know, me and my buddy, it was my best friend's birthday is on the day after Christmas, so we can't celebrate because
my fiance, it's the day before Christmas. It's a rough gig, man.
It's a rough go. So we celebrated his half birthday, and all of us have drank tequila for a very long time. Like that's always been our alcohol of choice. You know, we always, you know, taking shots of tequila, like every now and then we'll FaceTime each other, like, you know, on Thursday night or something when it's, you know, whatever, and just take a shot of tequila because none of us lives next to each other anymore. So we went there to go to Tequila, Mexico, to see tequila get made, how they harvest the agave plants, how everything gets stored, all the above. And that was incredibly, incredibly cool. We went to Jose Cuervo's, like, headquarter facility where they, like, do all of the agave harvesting and, like, you know, the El Jimadors are the people that, like, actually go out and cut the agaves and... You know, they showed us how that was done, how tequila is made, where it gets stored, the entire process. So it was really, really cool. To get there, because it's about a two-hour trip, we took a tequila train. So a Jose Cuervo train from downtown Guadalajara all the way there. And it was, like, such a classy thing. Like, 9:30 in the morning, they start us out with, like, here is our best tequila. You know, in tequila, you don't, like... It's an American thing to take shots, right? Like they're like they want you to sip it the way you would whiskey or scotch, and so like they're like here's like you know a food board for like a tasting, like and we want you to like try these coffee beans with it, and then try this like vanilla extract with it, and here's like sugar cane, chew on it, and then try and take a sip and taste the different flavor notes, and I could go on and on and on, but like. Can't say it enough. If you like visiting different countries, Guadalajara was amazing. I got a Uber there for $1.20.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Blake, are you going anywhere for vacation this summer? Do you have any plans? Getting out of the country? Do anything?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no. I'm probably just going to take at least a weekend trip up to the northern part of Arizona. We do have more than just a desert as part of our ecosystem. So probably do a weekend trip up there where it's going to be like, you know, 80 degrees and shiny and then get a little bit up to Flagstaff. You might get some cloud cover.
What's up there? Is it like lakes or what is it? Like what's
it's like it's forest style for the most part. Like you think of how Colorado, it's like mini Colorado is a good way to think of it. When you go up north, there's a lot more mountains. The Prescott area, which is like where the capital probably should have been versus the middle of the desert. That's like the spot where it's like higher elevations. So you'll occasionally get like a little bit of snow up there, but it's like I tell people all the time, you know, during the winter, you can go up north in Arizona, get some snowboarding in. During the summer, you go down, get some sandboarding in. You just get
snowboarding in Arizona. That's possible. I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, yeah. That's how it is.
Where he's talking about is much, much higher elevation. So
you think
like
the Grand Canyon is the highest point of that, and then you think a little lower than that, there's going to be all sorts of mountains, all sorts of that. That's the whole Rocky Mountain area, I guess,
they have,
that pops on up.
You can definitely go snowboarding out there. It's very low key, you know, like really basic stuff. But, yeah, there's definitely some snowboarding and, like, some mountain life up, you know, a couple hours away. You have to remember, I don't know, Chase, if you ever knew about that hiking trip, but I did that like 8-day hiking trip in Havasupai Falls, which is out that way. And it's, I mean, it's a bunch of different climates.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. It's a crazy state. But most people, you know, it's a favorite thing. Someone's like, all right, we're visiting Arizona, and you see, like, you know, some old west town with, like, a cowboy and a horse riding down next to, like, some sort of, like, you know, a bunch of nuns coming out of, like, a church or something. You're like, this is 2022, bro. Like, we're hanging out over here for the most part at the poolside of the Scottsdale Resort and can go golfing for the most part here in the middle of January. So, come on.
Now, so Blake, what part of Phoenix do you live in?
I'm in the Chandler area, so you think about East Valley. The West Valley is a lot older for the most part. You got your downtown Phoenix area, which is Phoenix culture is very funny because we adopted the LA drive everywhere model, but we decided to have a better freeway system to go with it. Everyone just goes into downtown, goes out of downtown, so it's like the funniest thing is you can leave a game or something like that. You walk 3 or 4 blocks away from the stadium, you're like, there's nobody here. Like it's empty. Like
You guys also have Old Town Scottsdale is essentially like where everybody goes to party, and Phoenix is like less of a major metropolis where like that's where everyone goes. So it's like spreads out. Like Tempe is here, downtown's here, and then Scottsdale's here, and like it's pretty evenly spread.
So it's about 6 or 7 city ecosystems, and I think like someone even made a comparison to the Breakfast Club. Like, all right, you got your sports guy, you got your Scottsdale party people, you got your weirdos back over there, you know, and like Maricopa, which is down like about 40 minutes away. All the people are like, I'll buy the cheap housing down there. It's just very funny to see how there's just character that each of the different parts all come together in Arizona, and that's just the major metropolis area. We're not even talking about people who go up north or go down south where they got the Tombstone actors that are all walking around there like it's good old Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp, at least for that. So a lot of fun stuff, at least in the Arizona area. Sports, on the other hand, has always been a little bit of an issue. They've got one major championship and a lot of heartbreak and a lot of disappointment over the years for Arizona sports fan who didn't, you know. My parents are from Michigan. They decided to not become Detroit Lions fans, which, of course, good for them, at least. Good for me. But a lot of people bring their sports teams with them. So you go to a sporting event, half the team, half the fans, I should say, are supporting the other team. So it's definitely a unique spot. It's not like you can go to a game and simply sit next to a bunch of the same fans everybody else.
Well, what's like, 1 through 4? What's the most passionate? What's the most flooded? Is it one?
There is a absolute, like, portal. Mm-hmm. From Scottsdale to the like Chicago, Michigan area. It's one of the wildest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yep. You tons of Packers fans, tons of Detroit people, tons of that. And the other one that's a big one, of course, is Dallas Cowboys because they're everywhere because of the 90s for the most part. And Cardinals used to be in the NFC East, so that was kind of their Super Bowl every year. It's like, all right, we're going 3-13 this year, but 2 of those wins are going to be against Dallas. Let's go, guys.
The Falcons were in the NFC West at one point, which is still just – I grew up with the Falcons in the NFC West. That was a thing that I grew up with.
When I was there and I would go watch 49ers games, I lived in Tempe at the time, and there was like a 49ers bar out there, and – I've never seen anything like it. Obviously, you know, a lot of people move from San Francisco where it's so expensive to a place like Phoenix where the cost of living is lower. The San Francisco, I wouldn't even say it's the number one. It might not even be top three, but the 49ers fan base out there is insane.
Yeah, they travel well. Yeah. And they
Didn't you go to a game last year in Tempe?
Yeah. I went to the Cardinals.
I mean, the Cardinals stadium, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all Niners.
Interesting. Have you seen a rattler in person, Blake? Have you seen one in person?
Heard one. Heard one. We're on a hiking trip. Heard a rattler. Everyone just froze for a quick second, like looked around at her feet, didn't see anything, and everyone just kind of quickly moved away. It was just like,
was this daytime or nighttime? Was it like
this is daytime? This is like in those weird areas where you get a subdivision that pops up, and it's just desert. Now, most
but you never
of those
saw. You just heard it.
Nope, just heard it for the most part. But it's like the bigger thing out here to worry about is scorpions, to be honest. Because like snakes will be one of those spots, but scorpions can go all over the place for the most part. Especially like if you're like, I got a new house. It's in this new place. You didn't realize that it was just about 6 months ago that was a dirt desert lot. Suddenly you're gonna have some scorpions that end up kind of in your backyard, and it's always a thing to look at for the most part. It's been less than I remember as a kid, but that's Arizona
more
for
scorpions.
You rattlers, more scorpions, which is weird. We've only had ever one type of like scorpion themed
I was gonna say like
sports thing. That's it. And it was the lacrosse team, and they lasted for like 2 to 3 years, and that was pretty much it. But yeah, the Scorpions, it's for the homeowners that you're going to want to look out for all the other out-of-town visitors. Thing you got to look out for, apparently, is that we've got pretty low alcohol prices compared to most other states, which is kind of interesting. Or maybe that's just the Seattle Seahawks fans that I met who were like, you know, super excited. They're like, dude, look at how cheap the beer is. And they just started loading up carts and stuff to put in their luggage to take back home. Just like, you guys okay? Like, is everything going all right up there in Seattle? Like,
Because I don't know if I've... There's this... Not many cities can drink the way that Scottsdale drinks.
This is
and
true.
I think they know this, if like, let's, we'll make it a little bit cheaper, but we're going to get more in the long run because these people just buy alcohol.
Did you do the IV at all on your trip, Evan? Were you doing the IV at all?
In Mexico, no. I mean, Mexico, Guadalajara is like where people that live in Mexico go to vacation. Like, it's not a vacation area. It's not a tourist spot. Like in that sense, it is very, very much like I mean, it's pure Mexican culture. Like, you go to Cabo and you're gonna see like everything tailored to like the American tourists, like none of that there. Like there's not going to be many IV places in Guadalajara.
There you go.
Their solution to that is to drink more tequila.
Blake, you're Arizona Cardinals. So yeah. I want to get your perspective, cause Evan, we got some stuff to sort through with his Niners in a second, but your Arizona Cardinals, they have had kind of a weird off season. And I was going through, this was on Revenge of the Birds a few days ago, may have been a week now, but one of the things that y'all did a good job of, like, highlighting who's going to make the roster, right? And you're looking at what the running back room's going to look like, and you look at, oh, you know, Benjamin might be the number two back in Arizona this year, and you're like, okay, this is going to be a very different-looking team. And no D-Hop, obviously, for several games to start things off. But then you look at it, and I had not realized that Andy Isabella was, like, in danger and not even favored, really, to make this roster. Is that real? Like, the Andy Isabella thing, not working with Cliff Kingsbury and not working in Arizona, is one of the more just under-the-radar things that I never understood, that this just has never worked as a marriage, and I don't understand it. So is this it? Like, have we already seen Andy Isabella play his last snap as a Cardinal?
Yeah, it's hard to know, because the biggest thing you can say right now is if you look at last year, they finally end up having where, all right, Rondale Moore is hurt, they got people out with COVID, this is the Andy Isabella time, and instead it was a guy they called up off the practice squad, Greg Dortch, who ended up getting like at least a jet sweep, was kind of that distraction guy in the game. Just for one reason or another, I think it's been the expectations that a lot of people had. I remember back in 2019, they had the Andy Isabella versus Hakeem Butler was like an actual debate that people had. Some people were like, hey, why? I would have taken Hakeem Butler in the second round for that one and taken Isabella like the fourth or the fifth. Others were basically saying, yeah, Butler, totally overrated. Isabella is a fantastic fit. I liked how the Isabella pick was because I thought it was a great fit. I looked at how DK Metcalf went later and was like, well, you probably would take that, but I had heard, and other people had heard too, that there may have been concerns about injuries of the neck or some stuff that was overrated, and you get a clean bill of health for a prospect for that one. Nowadays, you look back at it, and it looks pretty dumb that the Cardinals not only ended up passing on A.J. Brown with the 33rd pick, but also passed on Metcalf with the next pick, and they probably lucked out with the DeAndre Hopkins rule. So
I was going to say, like, you don't get D-Hop if you do that. So it's like
Bill O'Brien, at least, one of the definite all-time Arizona Cardinal fan favorites, obviously. So shout out to him. Well, maybe not everybody, but shout out Texans fans for those. With Isabella, what has kind of been the biggest thing, and this is coming into camp from seeing as a rookie, I expected that Isabella and Butler were going to play a lot because you had an aging Larry Fitzgerald. You wanted to see if you could get a guy outside kind of in the X. And with Cliff Kingsbury, his idea is that he really doesn't move his receivers around a lot. Now, he's done a little bit more of that over the years, but his general idea that he tries to put together is put his players in positions to make plays, try to get those one-on-one type of matchups, and then trust that those players are either going to go up and get it or can be able to actually separate, get downfield, get the ball. He tries to be able to then utilize some of that with the run game by utilizing, obviously, the air raid type of offense, spreading guys out, allowing them to be able to get guys and run up the middle, and, of course, utilizing a rushing threat in Kyler. So you'd think that Isabella would be able to work, but there's been some of those little things that just haven't clicked. I think one of the biggest ones I remember is seeing in rookie camp for Butler, you're watching him get kind of physically manhandled by a 5'9 corner who ended up spending the end of the practice squad, you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. If you're expecting an X receiver to be able to go there and all he can really do is just make 50-50 jump balls and not really be a physical player, you're probably in a whole lot of trouble. They just did the best they could, said, all right, run on a 9 route, go up and get the ball. Couldn't do it. So they end up moving on from him a little bit later. I think the Eagles even tried him out at tight end for something with his frame. Huh. Isabella, it was similar. He was having a hard time getting off of the press. You knew you kind of were having to relegate him to the slot, which he really hadn't played as much of. He was an outside receiver in college. And so
yeah, people just saw him and thought he was a slot guy. And it was like, no, this dude just runs go routes. And
he can run go routes. He was going downfield. Mm. The hard part for a lot of that was some of the things that people who were commenting were more of the film watchers, those experts. Mm. They noted that he was definitely had issues as far as for just letting the ball get into his body, not using his hands as much, which allowed defensive backs to kind of jam him, get the ball loose. And as far as the routes took, he would just not quite be in the place he needed to be at the right spot and the right time. You had these bang, bang type of throws. He would either be a little bit too short on his route or in some cases went a bit long. One of the plays that kind of sticks out would be one of those plays where the Arizona Cardinals are trying to run at least an over the route, middle route, where you've got essentially Isabella is on a levels type of route. And they end up throwing it. The ball goes a little bit high. He's not able to go up and get it. But he also didn't get enough depth on his route to go upfield, partially because it was going to bring him a little bit into harm's way. The ball ends up getting picked off, and you end up seeing how the Cardinals kind of pulled him a little bit after that. You could just see that there was just little avenues where the amount of time for him to be able to develop was taking a little too long. And as far as the jet sweeps went, you can kind of see what they did with Rondale Moore this last year, who ended up basically coming in and showed, okay, you're looking really for this guy who can be a dual threat, who's got the same type of speed but also has a little bit of a physical nature, who's able to make a little bit more change of direction. And we even saw it this past year. There was plays in the beginning of the season where there was a little check down to Rondale Moore. He makes two guys miss, gets out of bounds with 1 second left on the clock. You see him being able to use his hands in some different ways. You can kind of see what they looked for, I think, in Arizona. That's a little bit different. Is they kind of are trying to be able to win games now, and to take a guy from a small school like Isabella and kind of put him in that Wes Welker, Julian Edelman mode, you probably are going to need 4 to 5 years for him to develop into that type of player similar to Edelman and Welker. And he just hasn't taken those steps forward. And so I think the Cardinals have decided to move on in that regard. And now they end up with probably at least another type of slot receiver in a lot of ways that they traded for. They don't think they'll probably play him in a couple of different spots similar to Christian Kirk. And Hollywood Brown, who, when Kyler Murray knows him right out of college, and he's got probably a lot better deep separation than Isabella has, kind of have to be able to go with the guy and say, all right, Arizona's tried for this for a couple of times to get it right with this deep threat. Here's hoping that they can finally find that answer, at least with someone who Kyler Murray's already connected with.
Well, what do you make of the fit? Because it's kind of weird, because now Christian Kirk's gone, Isabella's gone, and D-Hop is gone for a significant portion of, to start the season. And now it's just like so much pressure is on Hollywood Brown, right? Like there's just not a lot of proven commodities, and relying on AJ Green in 2022 is asking a lot. So when you look at this wide receiver room and you look at just the pressure to start out well and to really get this thing moving in the right direction, because it's win now mode if you're Cliff Kingsbury, like, are you concerned about the current state of the wide receiver room, or do you think there's another position group that gives you more pause out of the gate here?
There's other position groups you can talk about, at least here. We'll get into that in a minute as far as for the biggest news that came out of Cardinals minicamp. But this is, I think, the first year that the Cardinals actually went out and tried to actually get, like, young weapons for Kyler more than just simply slapping a DeAndre Hopkins on it and saying, we've got Larry Fitzgerald, we're good to go. When Kyler came into the league, they had Christian Kirk playing outside, essentially in the X position, and they're basically, I think, second most effective receiver over that course of the year after Fitzgerald was like Demir Byrd, like one of these journeyman guys, and they ended up being just because he could run three routes better than the next guy. And so then you see how they took a next step in the following year by adding DeAndre Hopkins, and then you realize, oh, this offense is basically just DeAndre Hopkins, and with Christian Kirk on the other side, you're seeing occasionally Larry Fitzgerald running a 10-yard route, but you can kind of tell at least that he'd reached the end of his tenure. This past year, you kind of got to see they finally got some size on the outside to help with some of that. They had Hopkins one place, Kirk finally in kind kind of his spot in the slot. Mm-hmm. And they were able to actually unlock a little bit more of the 11 personnel, where they're able to actually have a blocking tight end. And this kind of fits a little bit with what we saw from Cliff Kingsbury, where the Cardinals in the end of 2019 and early 2020 were actually one of the best rushing teams in the NFL, because they were able to spread teams out, utilizing Kyler Murray's legs and being able to have a good tight end blocking. Mm. What we saw later in the year with Williams getting hurt was they got to use Zach Ertz. And I think what's interesting about the wide receiver spot is they may have indicated a little bit more of that desire to move to some 12 personnel. And yeah. I think that's because they drafted Trey McBride in the second round, which shocked a lot of people who are like, they just signed Zach Ertz to a 3-year deal. They've got Max Williams coming back. He's probably going to open on the PUP list. But, you know, did you just draft a backup tight end with your second round pick? And I think that's an indication that the Cardinals are going to try to be able to, in some ways, injury-proof some of their offense. Because let's be honest, when DeAndre Hopkins went out, their offense that had seemingly been super effective suddenly turned into, all right, in third and one, they got a one-on-one matchup. So Kyler's going to launch a deep ball outside to A.J. Green, who's not going to get it. And that was really that, and slot fades to Christian Kirk became their offense, and really it just was not able to take that next dynamic step. So I do think what we'll see from the Cardinals, at least for the first 6 weeks, is Hollywood playing some outside, maybe somewhat into the slot, AJ Green kind of staying in his side of the field. You might see a bit more of that 12 personnel, but don't be shocked if Rondale Moore ends up kind of sliding right into that Christian Kirk role and getting a lot more downfield routes. That's something I think will be very interesting to see if they can use some Hollywood, some Moore in that jet sweep type of motion, and then get both of those guys at least running a little more downfield.
Rondale's my dude. I loved him coming out of college. He has a lot of Julio Jones in him. Like, there is a lot of Julio to Rondale's game, and he was just so much fun to watch at Purdue, and they used him so well. Like, whatever Jeff Brom's doing up there in West Lafayette, David Bell, you got Rondale Moore, he just knows how to turn his receivers into just Swiss Army knives. Like, it's pretty cool to see. In terms of Kyler, though, we have to talk about this, and Evan's going to enjoy this. Do you enjoy the Kyler experience? Like, are Cardinals fans and in the community, are they like, yeah, we'll keep running this back year every year. We'll keep doing these off seasons. We'll understand that this is just part of the deal. I think he's like the only quarterback who did not meet with the media and over, what was it, OTAs. And he's mercurial, I think is the best way to describe it. And he's a super talented player. He is someone that you can win with. He is someone that I think a lot of franchises around the league would love to, and fan bases around the league would love to have Kyler Murray as their quarterback. But as someone who covers the team day in and day out and is locked in with other fans, like, is it enjoyable to go through this seemingly every offseason now?
Well, I think at least for some of it that's popped up, like last year, I think there wasn't nearly as much that you think of. This year, the biggest reason why a lot of that popped up was you reached year three, and then a lot of people looked at what Kyler Murray had and were comparing to, you know, the Josh Allen to Patrick Mahomes. And most people, I think, can readily say that he's not quite at that level yet. Dude doesn't have a playoff win. He clearly has been on a worse team. Like, those two quarterbacks went to playoff teams. But when it kind of reaches that at some point, people do want to see you produce. And then on the other hand, I think you look at and say, what's the value of a quarterback, at least, to, you know, is able to go through, make those plays, ramp your way up to double-digit wins. And clearly, like a lot of people could note, while the Cardinals did go 2-1 without Kyler Murray this year, you look at that one loss against the Carolina Panthers, like, oh, that's why Colt McCoy's a backup. That's okay, that's right. I think the biggest area that it comes down to, ultimately at least, is with the Cardinals being a poverty franchise for so many years, and Murray being like that smaller size, I think that there is definitely some level of trying to basically get that financial security locked in. And in a lot of regards, what really kind of matters ultimately is going to be keeping your franchise quarterback happy, because unless you are one of those teams that's able to bring another guy in right away, it's really hard. The Cardinals moved on from Carson Palmer and basically invested multiple spots, threw everything they could at the position. They tried to go after Drew Brees when he was a free agent for 24 hours before going back to the Saints. They tried to trade for Kirk Cousins. They signed, you know, Sam Bradford at least, and tried to hype him up saying, oh, this is our Kurt Warner reclamation project. And I'm like, all right, Giants Kurt Warner would have been complimentary for that. And, of course, taking Josh Rosen because they did not really want to deal with the Lamar Jackson experience, which many fans wanted. And so then at some point you're like, how important is that franchise quarterback to you? Now, I think a lot of it has come down to where I think the Cardinals are going to pay. And part of that's because when you look at where they've been at as a franchise, where they're having, and what their direction has been, you probably would say it'd be easier for them to bet on Kyler Murray with Cliff Kingsbury from what you've seen than it would be to, say, trade him all afresh, start completely from scratch, and then hope that the GM that you have and the quarterback developer that you wanted to hire at least and try to get a head start on would be able to then suddenly bring it back and start over. I think that Kyler is in a spot where, like you said, the biggest thing is going to be, is he going to be happy in Arizona? I think that's really going to depend on, can Arizona make moves that will keep him happy? Is it going to be a move where they can kind of compete? Because a lot of the reputation of the Bidwills has always been that they've struggled at wanting to spend at times. Some of that belongs to Mike's dad. I think that the other avenue, of course, is going to be, you know, how well are they going to support him? Are they going to be able to get him an offensive line? Are they going to be able to invest? In the last couple of years, the Cardinals had chances to be able to bring in CeeDee Lamb with the eighth pick. A lot of people had wondered if that was a move they could make. They could have gone after an offensive lineman. Instead, they've got two first-round linebackers, and now the team essentially is going to live or die on defense with those two first-round linebackers. Almost felt like it was apologetic, as like, all right, Kyler, like, we know that we've treated you poorly the last few years, so we're not just going to go and get you a wide receiver. We're going to get your dude, the guy who jumps onto Twitch streams with you, who you've been working out in the offseason. We're going to trade for him, bring him into the fold. That's one of those things, at least I think, that the Cardinals are looking at, because in a lot of ways, not to say that it's all about the quarterback, but Arizona in a lot of different ways has never really had this young franchise quarterback before. The last time they did was Jake Plummer, and he promptly decided to leave and head out to Denver before starting on a wall ball or whatever it was career, I think, some type of unique area of retirement for the most part that he went on. And that's pretty much been it for their franchise. They've had a lot of suffering for the most part. Teams and fans have wanted to get to that Super Bowl. But I think what will probably happen, at least, is that they'll end up caving. I think that part of this offseason's hurdles came from, at least from what we had heard talked about, Kyler and his camp were probably coming with a Dak Prescott type of deal. Cardinals didn't get back to him. I think they probably didn't want to have the general manager and head coach didn't want to see their quarterback signed, and suddenly leverage would go as far as if Kyler wanted to move on. They got their deals wrapped up for the most part after ownership decided that they'd done enough, at least for him, to get those deals. Murray probably would have wanted to keep one or two of the players, and when things kind of went sour, I think that that's when the agent decided to, you know, drop a letter to the media, push things out, delete the Instagram account. Normally, I think when you're talking about players like Debo or others, there's some level of drama, but when it's a quarterback, suddenly the teams like the Carolina Panthers, who are having to hope that Sam Darnold has like a miraculous season, or that Jimmy Garoppolo suddenly is available just to have hope, I think that really caused a lot of a stir for the most part. And in some cases, I think Murray is probably going to end up regretting that, because anytime something happens or anytime something has gone wrong, we see someone tweet out a picture of him in a baseball uniform.
And I mean, do you think this is it? Like, if they don't make the playoffs this year, Kyler, like, if they have a season where it's like Cliff gets fired, we're looking at like 6-11, is this it for Kyler? Does he ask out next offseason?
So first of all, like, Cliff Kingsbury just got another 5-year contract extension. So, like,
so we're locking him in.
If it was 6-11, locking him in. I always say, like, if there's 0-17 or like some type of dramatic collapse, never ruled that out. But like,
3-14, he's safe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. And some of that, that's even wild. If it's 3-14 and Kyler gets hurt, then there's going to be at least things that come into that. But it is just part of the NFL too that you can say. And some of that is when they locked up for that deal. You know, they decided to go with a 5-year deal versus a 2-year deal, a 3-year deal. I think a lot of that pops up too. You give them a 2-3 year deal and extension. Okay. Yeah. Like, why didn't you give them the 5-year? If you don't give them that extension, okay, well, now you're forcing them to prove it, and then if they don't prove it, then you're moving on. But if you believed in them, then why wouldn't you at least extend them? So clearly you don't. It's one of those areas that's really interesting. The Cardinals have wanted to get this type of stability for a while, and whether it's going to be a stability they can live with, it's going to be interesting. I do think, however, like, let's say that Cliff Kingsbury goes out. They go 6-11, like you said. They start out, don't win as many games at first, kind of make up a little bit with the D-hop, but then they drop a bunch of games down the stretch. Now you're talking about, at least, all right, now this is going to be a spot where we've seen Cliff 3 years in a row not be able to get stuff done in the second half. You're seeing, you know, maybe the Niners with Trey Lance pick up the pace a little bit. Maybe they're not able to overcome, you know, some of what those Rams have continued to do with Matt Stafford, with Sean McVay, who's pretty much owned the Cardinals ever since he's gotten into the division, even back with Bruce Arians. I think it's after that second year you'll look for all of that. So that would be the interesting spot, because 2023, that year, once it's finished, will probably lead to, I think, at least Kyler Murray under contract, needing to probably see some changes with the line. We'll see if Hollywood Brown ends up getting extended. Then DeAndre Hopkins at 31 or 32 is going to be looking at least for another contract extension of some sort. You're starting to kind of see at least that there's going to be some cracks that will pop up for the most part. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Arizona will end up choosing to over the next couple of years. You know, transition out of that rookie quarterback contract to what I think is probably paying Kyler somewhere 45, maybe even north of that, $1 million a year. Following, of course, the conclusion of his rookie deal.
Evan, are you at all concerned about the Cardinals this year? On the
not even
for the
a
Niners?
Little bit.
Oh, man.
Never. I mean, like, not even in a disrespectful way. Like, there's nothing.
Do you share that sentiment, Blake? Do you think that the Niners are going to be better than the Cardinals this year?
Gosh, like, I feel like this would have been the exact same conversation we could have had back in, you know, 2020, at least for that, or 2021 coming into the season, though. And
yeah,
the Cardinals ended up, of course, you know, beating the Niners twice. Now, clearly, ooh, there's differences that we saw with how
Evan was in the building, which
was I was in the building for that one, too. And, you know, as we were watching some of it, it's like, I think you need to see some progress, obviously, from what we saw with that first year development, Lance being super raw. But, of course, seeing the vertical threat, vertical element, seeing all that talent on the Niners, how they were able to get to the NFC Championship game.
You know, it's not very often that you can win a football game by running 16 QB powers,
yeah,
especially with a rookie quarterback. So I don't recommend it, but no.
The Cardinals needed to have a last-minute Kyler scrambles, throws the ball to DeAndre Hopkins to kind of put it away for the most part since there was struggles. Now, they were down two corners in the game and lost their starting center, Rodney Hudson, partway through. But Arizona, for that weird thing of a lot of people said, is this more of a fluke that we've seen? I think it's slow incremental progress, but like a lot of people have said, you know, maybe at that 7-0 team was simply you have no chance when you lose DeAndre Hopkins and JJ Watt, because when they did lose Hopkins and Watt, they really struggled to win a single game the rest of that season for the most part. I think the only won two games, if I remember correctly, without Hopkins and Watt in the lineup combined. One of those, of course, being one of those was that Niners game with Colt McCoy. Unfortunately, gosh, Colt McCoy just seems to come back to punish like Seahawks fans and Niners fans. It's a weird, weird dichotomy.
Good career for him, though.
Yeah, he's made his money. He's done well. Yeah. I think a lot of that comes down to, at least ultimately, like the Niners have been able to put together a ton more talent. You see, Kyle Shanahan has been able to be good. Arizona's kind of that team that like a pesky mosquito just doesn't seem to be able to go away. I think that the question is going to be, is Arizona going to continue to be able to build in some regards and be able to overcome, you know, like some of these suspensions? There's a lot we can talk about with Rodney Hudson, obviously.
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to overcome that? And on the other side of the Niners, are we going to see that huge step forward, at least with Trey Lance, where we're going to actually see a far more dynamic offense versus, like you said, being able to have because the quarterback, at least that we saw, even with the potential and everything coming out of college, was so raw that you almost felt like you're probably going to need to, at least this is my opinion, I would have started Trey Lance for a year knowing no matter what happens, you're probably going to end up at least seeing better results in the long term than you would in the short term. I said I was probably wrong on that because the Niners made it all the way to that NFC Championship game. It's just hard to be able to say, at least for the most part, of were you held back as a result because of Garoppolo, or was this a spot where the team was understanding that they were in a transitionary process? Maybe this is their Alex Smith to Colin Kaepernick, or I guess Alex Smith to Mahomes, or Alex Smith to whatever other quarterback he seemed to always hand the reins off to who is more talented. It's going to be very interesting this year, especially because I do think the Cardinals have had quite a few cracks and weaknesses that have come in, and they're probably going to be relying on their quarterback and some of those weapons to cover up for some of those weaknesses.
Yeah. Evan, your team, we talked about a little bit here, we alluded to. A lot of drama this week. Julian Edelman talking about Jimmy G on the Pivot podcast this week. We had that.
Did you see my tweet?
I did. I worry sometimes, Blake. I send Evan stuff where I'm like, I don't know if I should send him these things that I see Niners related, because I know he's going to tweet about it, and one day it's going to be a problem where I'm responsible for sending him something that caused a stir.
I had it written out long before you sent it, so we're
okay.
Good. No, but I like so naturally, like, all they were doing was they were asking Julian Edelman about Bennett's comments, right? Like, they're saying, like, Bennett was basically saying, well, like, oh, Jimmy was about to get traded or about to leave. His agent wanted him to sit out and not risk his injury because, you know, whatever contract he might get, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, Julian Edelman was asked about it, right? And Julian Edelman is a guy that was with the Patriots the entire time, retired as a Patriot, right? Was always in the position that he was in basically from the start, right? Like, he was never competing with anyone. He was never worried about, like, where is he going to go? You know, he always was, like, in this safe position. And then Bennett, naturally, is one of those people where it's like, you know, Bennett, he had been bouncing around, right? Like, he hadn't really been in a settled place. He was looking for someone to take him post-Seattle. You know, he had a bunch of one-year contracts, eventually retiring. And they're sitting here, like, I mean, basically, I mean, excuse my language, but calling Jimmy Garoppolo a pussy, you know, and, like, that was the word that Bennett used, right? Yeah. And, like, it's a hilarious thing because as a player, Jimmy Garoppolo, when he played for the 49ers, has been one of the most, like, just gutsy, like, tough quarterbacks, I think, in the NFL. Every single player, you know, and, like, listen, is all of his teammates going to say Jimmy's the best quarterback in the NFL? No. But what do they always say? They're like, Jimmy is tough as nails. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's a great teammate. Like, he's got our back. He's a great leader. Like, and that, like, these are two guys that'll never be in the situation that Jimmy Garoppolo was in of, listen, you're behind Tom Brady. You're mm-hmm. not winning this. You know, Kraft wants you to stay, or, you know, what was it? Kraft wants you to whatever. You know, Bill Belichick wants you to go. But you're not winning this battle, so they don't want you.
I think it was flipped. I think Belichick wanted to keep him, and I think Kraft wanted
but,
him out. Yeah.
But basically, I'm sure the agent's looking at him and going, listen, you're not beating out Tom Brady. They don't look at you as the next up after Tom Brady. Like, they just don't care. Right? They've got Jacoby Brissett. He's now all of a sudden a good backup. Like, you need to worry about yourself because you're not getting this next contract from the Patriots. Mm. They don't see you as the next guy. They don't believe in you like that. It's Tom Brady. You know, that's a hard hill to climb. Mm. And so, like, to just sit there and be like, oh, all he cared about is, you know, himself. He didn't care about the team. It's like, well, the team doesn't really care about him. They look at him as a backup quarterback behind Tom Brady. Like, they, like, sure, they need him right now because Tom got injured, but, like, I think when you look at the context, it was such an absurd concept. So that was kind of my point there.
It seems like just two different Jimmys, where it's like San Francisco Jimmy, where he's the starter and lead guy, and then in New England, he's just the guy on the bench and was never seen as the guy. Like, it's just two different scenarios, and he's Jimmy asked to be two different kinds of guys.
He was waiting.
Yeah.
He was in waiting to figure out, like, he's like, you know, think about Jimmy being drafted in the second round by the Patriots. You've sat behind Jimmy Garoppolo being coached by Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, some of the best coaches in the NFL the last 20 years, the best, basically, you know, and you're like, all right, I'm ready. Like, when am I going to do it? Like, Tom Brady's 36, he's 37. Guys, what is going on? Yeah. When is this man leaving? You know, and, like, I think when you look at it from that perspective, I can see it. But then like, regardless of what they say, it doesn't matter. You can't call Jimmy not tough because everything he's done since he's been in San Francisco has been tough. He's played through a million injuries. He's taken huge hits. Like, he came back. He got a high ankle sprain and played two games later. Ask any doctor in the world how long you're supposed to stay out for a high ankle sprain. It's not two games. So, I think it's a non-factor. I think the reality is right now is Jimmy Garoppolo is the only real story left to talk about this season. Like, the Jimmy Garoppolo, the Baker Mayfields, right? Like, everything's kind of settled in at this point. So they're like, well, what's going to happen? Right?
We just want to know where they both end up, man.
Right. That's the thing.
My favorite that came out this week is the Cleveland Browns option, where it's like, if you're looking at a year suspension for Deshaun, potentially more, like, if you're looking for the ultimate stopgap 1 year, like, if you think your roster's ready to win now, Jimmy G is the answer, actually, in Cleveland. He actually makes a bunch of sense. I just don't want good things for Cleveland. I just don't want them to be able to get out of this. They made their own bed. I want them to have to suffer the consequences of making these decisions. Like, I don't want it.
The one thing I will say is this. Like, Jimmy is in a terrible situation with the injury and also just, like, the way it all, like, ended up with the 49ers, right? Like, Jimmy literally, like, they go, well, we want more, you know, we want a first round pick or whatever it is they said. We're not taking anything less. Yada yada yada. They wait till the last second, then he has to get surgery, all these things. I think that Jimmy's side probably could have handled it better. I know the 49ers side could have handled it better. But like, here we are. The options are almost non-existent at this point. It's like the Browns or the Panthers. But like for Jimmy, it's above and beyond the best choice. For Jimmy to be able to go in and have a really good roster and also a city that, you know, from a fan base perspective, let's not talk about the team because the team, I wish nothing but bad things on them for the rest of their lives. But for the fans, like, I think they deserve a year of Jimmy, right? Like, if there's one thing Jimmy is, he is a professional. He is mature. He is going to say the right things. He's going to be that leader. And it's just like, dude, the Browns fans are about to go through hell with Deshaun Watson. It hasn't gotten better. It's gotten almost only worse. And to be able to, like, bring in Jimmy for a year and then also for Jimmy to have that year and then, you know, kind of leapfrog into whatever his next spot is by, like, hey, this is, like, you know, my tryout. I'll show every other team what I can do.
Yeah. I actually have a take on this that's similar, and this is kind of like just the way I think
of
the discussions here. So without comparing the two quarterbacks, because obviously I think one of them is clearly superior, there was a reason, I think, when you look at where the Cardinals, they had Kyler Murray drafted, they had Josh Rosen on the roster, and the Kingsbury made a huge point about we got to get Josh traded. Eventually, the GM wanted to hold on for a first. He traded a first, third, and a fifth to get this guy. He wanted to make sure he could find at least a first back in value. Right. They did end up finally trading him, got him off of the roster, and essentially what that did was it cleared up any miscommunication people were going to have about Kyler Murray being the guy. And I think that's one of the areas that in some cases maybe is a disservice of you kept Jimmy, and so it's like, all right, there's precedent. You saw it happen with Alex Smith before with Mahomes. You've seen it happen other times. This is a 20-year-old kid that you just drafted who clearly is needing more time for seasoning. The issue, I think, of course, is that after that first year, to be able to say, all right, we're going to go and make sure that we're getting back at least a second from, or we think that this quarterback is worth this much, and you see how the league has responded in kind for the most part. I think that one thing is it not only has done a disservice, I think, to San Francisco by essentially making things so muddied for the fan base, because you get fans who are now having to say, well, Jimmy this or Trey Lance this, versus simply, hey, Trey Lance is going to be the guy. We're not even going to worry about Jimmy as a backup or having any type of winning the job back, just keeping it nice, clear, and concise. And I think it would have also been able to provide perhaps at least a better option if they had been able to even say, hey, if teams are only offering a fourth round pick, well, guess what? If Jimmy's going to go to a team, at least it's offering a fourth, like the Panthers or something like that, and has a chance to not only come and maybe save Matt Rule's job, potentially, because that man is the guy who said, yeah, let's go trade for Sam Darnold. Great idea. And is really regretting a lot of that right now. He may have had a chance to be the guy for each of those, maybe earn a second contract with some of that versus being considered a stopgap, because some quarterbacks go in to be the stopgap. I think of Ryan Tannehill with the Titans, and suddenly, next thing you know, he's their main option moving forward. And it's just how it works out sometimes.
Can you imagine, we've already talked about this on this pod before, but like just in the context of where we're at right now, can you imagine if the Panthers, you know, or the Colts last year, I think the Colts are a great example, would have said, hey, let's trade the same or more for Jimmy Garoppolo that they did for Carson Wentz or Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine either of those two teams right now? Like, the Colts won. Like, they have a really good quarterback. They're in a better situation right now. Matt Ryan is...
I mean, it still cost them their playoff berth last year, though.
Right. You know, absolutely.
Like, it's ultimately the difference in them making the playoffs.
Right now, the Colts...
Falcons fans a lot.
Okay,
the Colts are in a good situation right now. But that's my point.
Sorry.
But, you know, the Panthers and like, it's the same thing. These are teams that literally bet on a, you know, oh, the ceiling, yeah, the best case scenario. And they got the worst case scenario. So, you know,
it seems like those don't really work out very often. The second team for the early first rounder who didn't work in stop one. Like, the reclamation projects seem to be pretty unlikely to pan out on team number two.
It's very interesting too, because there is at least some precedent for seeing some of those quarterbacks, but it comes across with the Jimmy Garoppolo Trey Lance comparison, which I think is even the same area of, you know, the Alex Smith type of comparison is a great one. Why did two teams who were playoff teams and really hardy contenders with him want to move on? Because you look at the elite quarterbacks throughout the league, when teams take away everything schematically, take things away talent wise that arm is going to be able to show through it, the legs have to be able to show through it. We're playing true 11 on 11 football. And ultimately, I think that's one of the reasons why you look at the Niners. They wanted to have an available quarterback. When Kyle has had Jimmy Garoppolo healthy, they've been ultimately a dominant force in the NFL. When he's not been healthy or not available, because he's not able to, whether it's running, getting away, or just taking some of those hits, we've seen ultimately how the Niners and his, like, I think at one point this year, we even were joking about how Cliff Kingsbury had actually passed up Kyle Shanahan in win totals at one point during the year, because not only did he beat him head to head, but because you look at the availability and say, oh, he said Kyler Murray play in all but basically three games, and those three games that he didn't have him, they had a capable backup who was probably like a Jimmy Garoppolo light in Colt McCoy, who was able to at least get the job done, not for a degree of carrying the team to an NFC championship game like Jimmy has been able to, but being able to at least overcome some of that, get by, and then get your quarterback healthy. And
yeah,
I think that's really what it comes down to in the NFL, is that teams are going to continue to make some of those bets on those guys who have those physical traits, because at the end of the day, those physical traits are the ones that do end up winning out. It's just one of the places, at least, of why you can see those quarterbacks. You're like, all right, let's take a look at the 2018 draft class. And you're like, wait, you're telling me that the guy who ran that fast in Lamar, the guy who ran that fast in Allen, went after those two Pac-12 guys for the most part? Well, at least one of those Pac-12 guys. And that guy out of Oklahoma, like, I get the Baker love out of Oklahoma for all of that, but man, like, for one of those little guys who was there running around, you could tell that he's a guy who loved to play like Kyler Murray, but didn't really have the legs of Kyler Murray for the most part, or even the arm of Kyler Murray. And I think that's where it is in the NFL, is ultimately it comes down to the reason why teams have given up those picks or tried to move on for those avenues. And it's really been an interesting debate to see, because the only guys who've kind of made it on those second teams are ones you're like, oh, Ryan Tannehill, this is great. He gets to go and run a play action game off of, you know, Derrick Henry running up the middle. And when you take that away, you can really see him get exposed in the playoffs, or seeing some of those quarterbacks for the most part who end up, you know, like a Drew Brees was basically wrecked, ruined as the Chargers ended up getting failed out in Miami, and suddenly was able to be in an offensive coordinator who decided to have him check it down however many times to these running backs, and was able to make an effective passing offense work despite Breeze, you know, not being able to chuck it 60 yards down the field. It's all about being able to attack in the NFL and force the defense to have multiple things to account for. And I think Trey Lance brings a dimension in being able to have that deep ball that Jimmy Garoppolo just doesn't.
Debo, though, has not rescinded his trade offer, because Evan cannot have nice things. Evan is not allowed to have a normal offseason.
That's not an actual storyline.
So you don't think it's still something to monitor?
No.
Okay.
Like, I mean, so once again, like I was talking about this earlier.
What about the over-under? Like, the over-under, a year and a half, Debo Samuel still on this roster.
No. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. The thing that they said was, oh, well, he hasn't, rescinded his trade request. It's like, what does that even mean? Debo goes, hey, I want to be traded. And the 49ers were like, okay, we'll check it out. Hey, everyone, who wants to trade for Debo? Well, you know, he was one of the best offensive players in the NFL last year, one of the best wide receivers. Like, we're probably going to need a first and a third, something like that. One team goes, how about we swap firsts? No. Hey, Debo, no one wants to pay anything near what you're worth.
But the problem with that, too, is it's just that, like, they'll pay it, but you have to agree to being used how you were just used in San Francisco, and you don't want to be that player anymore.
But that's
it's just
my,
a weird, but it's a weird on. Thing.
But that's my point. So then Debo goes, oh, no one wants me for that. I'm not getting traded. And then he goes back to the team and he goes, hey, my agent's going to continue negotiations with you. He didn't technically go, hey, guys, I've rescinded my trade agreement. Like, does he need to write it? Like, does he need to send a letter? Does he need to get it notarized?
I mean, just tell the team, like, through the agent, just like, hey, we're good for another year. We'll revisit it next year.
But my point is like,
he's locked in for this fall.
No, just the headline, the article, like, what, like, hey, source. Has Debo officially rescinded his trade agreement? No. Does that mean that anything's changed? Like, the headline in itself is just clickbait, bull, whatever. We don't swear on the Chase Thomas podcast. The only time I ever go as long without swearing is on Chase's podcast. But like,
it's very
like,
impressive right now. So far, I've only had one caution, at least that I've been on here for the most part. So this has been great.
But like, no, really though. Like, are we all on the same?
Is for everybody.
Are we all on the same page? This is not a real story. They are just taking the technicality that he hasn't rescinded the trade request. Like, that's like me
it's
going.
Just too much smoke for me. It's just I don't think this lasts long. And now we're seeing how early like the AJ Browns of the world moved. Where I'm just like, he's out of there. Like, if it's not this year, it's next year.
You are buying, this is literal clickbait, and you're buying into it with, like no stopping.
He's never going to want to live in Santa Clara. It's never going to happen.
First off,
he's not going to want it.
He doesn't want to. He's going to sign this extension because he does not have a choice.
Yeah.
No other team wanted him. They could have traded for him. No one was going to pay a first and a third, and then also sign him for $25 million a year. Like, it wasn't going to happen. He understood that. Like, so, like, that, once again, I feel like I don't know that the point maybe got driven home to you. Debo wasn't asked if he's going to rescind his trade request, and then he goes, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
That's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They are just, oh, well, Debo technically hasn't rescinded his trade request. We got to go ahead and write an article on that. Debo has not rescinded the like, nothing has changed. There's been nothing different from 2 months ago when they decided, oh, no one's going to pay for him. Mm. Okay, we're going to continue negotiations for contracts. He's going to sign an extension, period. Nothing's changed. That headline, that article, is all nonsense. It was just someone trying to write an article.
Do you know it's not nonsense, Evan? I looked at, I don't know if you guys have done this yet, but for folks who have not gotten to this point, I highly encourage the NFL fans. If you're wondering about betting on the Kansas City Chiefs in 2022, go ahead and peruse that schedule. Because I'd like heard rumors that it was bad. And then you actually look at it, and I think it's the worst schedule I've ever seen. I really think it's the worst schedule I've ever seen for a team that's trying to win the title.
Well, I mean, like, could you look at me and say, after the AFC West like smoke settled this offseason and we all saw the powerhouses that are in that AFC West, and would anyone be surprised for me to go, hey guys, the AFC West teams are gonna have a hard time?
But it's not just that. Okay, can I read this schedule, Evan? Like, I don't know if you've seen it, like you have it in front of you, but this schedule, it opens with our guy's team right here.
I was about to say, one of the worst schedules you've ever seen. Obviously, who wants to face Cliff and Kyler in week one on the road? Clearly, like,
no one wants that. Like, D-Hop would make that more menacing.
That was the biggest one about all of that. But yeah, it's also going to be interesting to see how that secondary looks, because with no Tyreek and how the Cardinals' defense is, assuming J.J. Watt will be back there for week one. But continue.
Let's not do this. The Chiefs are going to steamroll the Cardinals.
I don't think that's locked in. So you guys. They're going to have to adjust.
This is not a negative. Like, this is not like me trying to poke fun at the Cardinals. This is me take emotion out of it entirely. The Chiefs are a better roster. The Mahomes is like, the Chiefs are going to steamroll the Cardinals. They brought in Hollywood Brown.
Mm-hmm. D-Hop is gone. Counterpoint. I was told the same thing back for week one of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cardinals went over on the road and beat the Niners, and we predicted that they would because we saw that the Niners were a bit not just overconfident, but the Cardinals' game plan of offseason giving time. They, at least when Cliff Kingsbury has shown that there's been time for prepping and going through, they've actually come up and had a great game plan. He is undefeated so far in all of the home season openers. Now, granted, that's because they tied in week one when they looked kind of miserable against the Lions and managed to come back to it. But he's undefeated in season openers. Even this year, people were like, Titans, playoff team, Cardinals again on the road, they're going to get roasted. And they won by 5 touchdowns in that game. So I don't think you rule it out for that one. But a lot of, like I've said, is the Cardinals, I said, it's that mosquito that's nicking at you for the most part, where you're like, what I'll say is, do I pick the Cardinals to win? I'm like, I think that they could be one. And I said, could they lose? Sure. Could they win or maybe win the next week against the Raiders for all of that stuff, at least with Vegas, Derek Carr? You've got Devontae Adams in there, sure, but could I see them going 1-1 and it being a coin flip in which game? I could, at least.
The 49ers, since Alex Smith in 2011, have been above and beyond the most successful team at blowing games they should win. There is no team in the NFL that it has lost more winnable games. The 49ers, like, I am obviously biased.
Yeah, but I have watched the Atlanta Falcons not dive into football.
Falcons, Chargers, Cardinals are up there too.
Maybe the Chargers. Maybe
Chargers might be number one here.
Maybe, but I don't think so, because the 49ers have lost two Super Bowls, two NFC championships. They've lost games against teams with Colt McCoy as the starter twice. Like, my point is this. Yes, absolutely. When the Cardinals beat the 49ers in the opening week, should they have won? Probably not. But the 49ers in 2020 were an absolute mess.
Yeah.
This is not the 49ers. They are not playing Jimmy Garoppolo. They're not playing the 49ers and all of the curses that go along with that team. They're playing Thanos.
We don't know, though. They're not going to be the same. I think there is a drop. I don't think there's a way around there not being a drop from Tyreek to Juju and MBS. Like, I just don't think there's a way around that. I think there's going to be a drop. And then you look at this schedule. So, like, you go to Arizona. Great.
Cliff,
like,
knows Patrick. Now, he also may know everything he does well, and he may do it, but that'll be an interesting read, because Andy Reid also wins all his home openers, too. So, like, they have not played yet. The last time the Cardinals played the Chiefs, it was the Josh Rosen era on the road, and so you're talking about that was kind of the game that when people watched it, the Cardinals actually gave the Chiefs a tough time in that game, and then Mahomes threw two late touchdowns, and Josh Rosen, I believe, threw a pick six on a screen that ended the game. So that's really how the 2018 Cardinals were essentially that team that even in the games that they had a slight chance of winning and weren't getting blown out, they would, of course, find a way to blow it in the last seconds.
Well, you've got Cardinals September 11th, right? And then you got the Chargers on the 15th.
Thursday night football.
Yes. Then you go to Indianapolis, to Tampa Bay, Vegas at home, Buffalo at home, at San Francisco, Tennessee at home. And then, great, you get a little breather with Jacksonville on November 13th. Then you go to Chargers, Rams at home, on the road in Cincy, on the road in Denver, on the road in Houston, and then the Seahawks and Broncos, Raiders to wrap. Like, that is the start that the Chiefs are going to have next year. Like, go ahead and lock it in. The start for the 2022 Chiefs is going to scare the crap out of a lot of people. You're looking at like 1-5, 2-6, something like that. They are going to have a rough start here. They're not going to be favored in some games that people think they're going to be favored in. I think they're in for a rude awakening, and I don't think the Chiefs, I think we've seen the last of just dominant 15-2 type Chiefs years. I think Tyreek is going to really hurt. And when you look at how deep that division is now, I've bet on the Broncos winning this division. I think they have the best schedule for it. I think they betting on this group is the way to go. But man, you look at this schedule, I don't know. That is rough.
At number one seed is rough. They play the Rams. They play the Broncos. And like we said, I'm excited for this year because for the first time we're seeing perhaps the two best divisions in the NFL play each other. And also, of course, the NFC West is playing the NFC South. This means you're going to get Tom Brady, of course. Yeah. So it's going to be really
and
fun
Desmond
to
Ritter.
See those games.
And Desmond Ritter. People
forget. Let's not forget at least about the Jameis Winston QB1, which of course is in fantasy hearts everywhere, I think, at least, you know. Interceptions don't count for 2 points negative when you throw a pick, at least, for Jameis. And so fantasy championships decided by that pick six in that final season with the Bucks. Glorious.
But you never know. I mean, he's just throwing dimes in Green Bay. Like, it's just, I don't know. Jameis, the roller coaster that is a Jameis Winston quarterback-led team is fun for the NFL. I think it's enjoyable.
I want to finish up with the Chiefs thing. I hate the Chiefs. I don't really hate the Chiefs, but they beat the Niners in the Super Bowl. So I'm obviously not a Chiefs fan. Let's say that.
Yeah.
I'm not a Chiefs fan. The Chiefs are going to beat the Cardinals. They'll probably lose to the Chargers. They're going to beat the Colts. They're going to beat the Bucks. They're going to beat the Raiders.
You have two or three upsets there because they're not favored in the Bucks game and they're not favored in the Colts game.
I don't care that whether or not they're favored. Like, I understand where everyone wants to give the Bucks, you know, the winning the Super Bowl, but like, I feel like I'm the only person that at this point that ever wants to say this, but like, I'm not worried about the Bucks this year. Ooh. I'm not worried about the Bucks. I'm not worried about Tom Brady. Like, Gronk is gone, but is he really gone? Like, I'm just
if they
not.
Need him in Week 10, Gronk's back.
I'm sure, but like, you know, the Bucks last year towards the end of the season was what I was always going to expect out of the Bucs with Tom Brady. I was really surprised that they won the Super Bowl that year. But, like, the Chiefs, unless something really, really happens to throw
something
us
did
off.
Happen. Tyreek Hill got traded. He's Doug, gone. Their best player is gone.
I understand that Tyreek Hill is a great receiver, but like Tyreek Hill had Patrick Mahomes throwing to him.
I mean,
would Tyreek Hill have been with Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback?
I think Tyreek was pretty good with Alex Smith. Too.
I was going to say
Alex Smith is a pretty damn good long like deep ball thrower.
Yeah, like, I think Tyreek Hill made both lot. I think it was a simpatico relationship where they helped each other out a lot, in different ways.
If after the first 7 games of the Chiefs season, if they have more than 2 losses,
in. 7 games? We need to come up with a bet on this.
What do we got?
Lock that in.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No. Oh, they're going to play the Niners. Never mind. I thought it was the Titans. So, yeah. The first, I'll say 8 games, 3 losses.
I'll take the over on that.
Yeah. And then how about this? We'll shotgun a White Claw for... Can you even shotgun a White Claw, old man?
Okay, that's enough. I'll be 30. you know what's funny? After that, I will be a married man by that point.
I know. I'm so excited. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I was about to say, the one bet that we've always had that's been fun that we did in the past, you basically have to put it on your Twitter account that you have to either shotgun a beer or just down some type of a beverage. And it's not like it's a mixture. Like, it's an actual cocktail. But we had someone who's like, all right, you got to do like a rum and coke with this trashy rum and this like big K cola. And you had to basically just down the whole thing. Those are fun because then it's like, all right, you still get alcohol. You get a bit tipsy. You know, it's trashy for that one. But at least, you know, then you get to see a little bit of suffering. And it's more fun. It's more fun than like someone changing your Twitter profile picture avatar to be like, all right, here's a picture of Patrick Mahomes for Evan for the week. It's like, those aren't fun. Like, do something at least it's fun.
I got to say, as a White Claw fan,
hold on. Just to be clear, you need for full disclosure, you're not just a fan. You're an influencer. You're like a White Claw. What is your actual title? You
Brand
can't
ambassador.
Say fan. Brand ambassador. Yeah.
No, my point is this. I'm 34 years old. I am long past the age of where I'm going to drink trash alcohol. I'm better than that. I'm not doing it.
That's why it's the bet. That's where it's there. You know, it's fun at least for the most part.
But no,
sometimes it'll be like everyone's voting for you to have a Four Loko, and someone happens to have an old Four Loko lying around. You're like, all right, you know what? Here you go.
I'll say this because you have a Waffle House hat on, Chase.
It's a delicacy.
I will say no
I'm pushing
more than,
for it at the reception of my wedding.
I will say no more than 3 losses in 8 games. You're going to say over. Yeah. I will say for every 1 loss or win that we were wrong on, we have to eat 5 pancakes.
Oh, I'll do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Real full-size pancakes.
Okay. And we have to record it, though. It has
to be 100%. And you can't leave with the establishment until you're done. So if you got 10 pancakes, you sit down and eat until you're done.
How about I do waffles for mine? Because I'm a waffle.
I was not asking.
Oh, okay.
It's pancakes, dog.
So you're sending me to IHOP.
Waffles are easy.
Are they?
I think so.
I don't know. I've never done the side-by-side. I don't know what's
heavier. Pancakes are larger.
Okay. I've just seen The Rock pound them. Like, he stacks them, like, the whole, like, crazy stack of pancakes that The Rock carbo loads on. We'll end on this. First coach fired. I thought this was pretty interesting from Bet Online. Those odds are out in 2022. I'll go ahead and say the top like 10, 11, 12 is just not real with Vrabel, Arthur Smith, and Robert Saleh.
Right.
But I do think this is super interesting because there are some names that kind of stun me. Because someone's going to get fired. We just like to, but like, unfortunately, that's just the nature of this industry. The nature of the beast is like someone will lose their job. Like someone we don't expect, and you're like, there's no way. But the list: Matt Rhule, number 1, plus 300. Number 2, Mike McCarthy, plus 500. Pete Carroll, number 3, plus 600. Frank Wright, plus 700. Number 4, Ron Rivera at number 5 at plus 800. And then Kevin Stefanski at plus 10 to 1. And then my favorite, though, is Dan Campbell 10 to 1, where I have been banging this drum, Blake, and Evan and I are on different pages, and a lot of people, like, everybody loves Dan Campbell. I like Dan Campbell. If you're going 32 games, or 34 games now, with Jared Goff as your quarterback, 34 we're looking at here, the win percentage is going to be bad. The win percentage, and they've done a lot of good this offseason. Like, I love their draft. They did a really great job there. But I've always been concerned of, like, if the offense is bad again and you really don't have a quarterback and you run this back, like, in today's NFL, where everything, like, if you don't have that exciting quarterback, it's really hard to get fans and ownership to buy in, where they're looking around the league, they're like, everybody's got a quarterback now. Everybody's got a fun offense, and we're going 3-14, just building this culture, building this thing out, and the defense getting a little bit better at a time. Like, Jeffrey Okuda's fun. What a great story. But if we're not getting the wins and people don't want to come see us and they don't want to see these games, like, that's a problem. Like, I think it's a hard sell because there's only so many of these NFL games that it's just, I think it's a really tough sell. And I believe in Dan Campbell's vision. I'm just not sure he's going to be able to see it through because I don't know if he's going to get the offense where it needs to be in time. I think there is this, like, threading the needle here where you've got to show that, like, this can compete with the Aaron Rodgers of the world quick, because the Vikings are going to be good this year, and I don't see a path to this. Maybe Justin Fields is over there in Chicago, so if he pops a little bit, that makes things a little bit more concerning. But you did not take a quarterback again this year, and he went on record. It's like, you can win. I believe you can win without a elite quarterback, and I think we'll see. But that's why I do think he's not the favorite, but he's someone to monitor. I think Matt Rhule is the most just, like, obvious. But for you, Blake, is that the number one that pops for you from that list, or do you have someone else that you think is number one?
So here's two things I think that you could say, and sometimes what I'll look at is with coaches, and what you do is you give coaches the same record and then ask what their security is, because that seems to make a lot of sense. Like,
okay,
if Bill Belichick goes 3-13, you're not firing Bill Belichick, so clearly that's one of the safe zones.
Right.
If you said that the Detroit Lions went 3-13 with Dan Campbell and Mike McCarthy went 3-13 with the Detroit with the Dallas Cowboys, McCarthy's gone, because, like, the expectations are so much higher.
Right.
I think with the new GM coming in, I think that they're going to get more patience. You can even see it in how they gave up a ton of picks to up and get Jamison Williams, who's not even going to play for, like, you know, half of the season at least. I think that they're looking at some of the long haul there, where I could see that being a place that they are probably going to be getting a few more years at least. Now, it's obviously with the new GM in tow, that's going to be a big part of it. I think when you look at established GMs or owners like Jerry Jones that's there, and then you look at, or the opposite, which would be, you know, sometimes you'll get these first-time one-year head coaches, and things just are terrible. Like, it's a train wreck. It's awful. The one name that's not mentioned on there that I think would be probably the one I would look at just because of the odds would be Matt Eberflus. Because if you take look at Chicago, train wreck. So here's why. If it's he's a defensive head coach, and it's one of the worst offenses.
You're
going to
Arizona Cardinals him? You're going to Steve Wilks him?
Well, that's the case. If they Steve Wilks him, and you've got that, the other thing also, of course, is if Justin Fields goes out and doesn't show any progress or improvement, you're going to be like, okay, your choice is going to be you fire the head coach, or you bring in an experienced veteran offensive coordinator. They haven't gone out and pursued or got any wide receivers to help him. Tevin Jenkins is apparently still beat up. It's not that, and this is the thing, not to say that it would
this
be maybe the first
like
coach fired.
But yeah, that's what we're talking about, though.
His
first
odds,
coach fired.
But here's the thing, the odds in being the first coach fired. He's got lower odds to be the first coach fired than Arthur Smith, who's going to probably be playing Desmond Ritter, like, you know, week 10 or 11
but that's
or so.
The thing.
I like those odds really, really well for the most part, considering
it's a good value bet.
It's a really good value bet for the most part. If you had to say who's the first coach to be fired, I think it really is going to come down to, can Matt Rhule, with whatever else goes through, get a little bit more structure at least in place to be able to show that despite giving the 7-year deal, despite all these different choices he's made where the team is just devoid of a quarterback, is the expectation for him to say, all right, you got to start showing results, or are they going to give, like, all right, we're going to, you know, we'll Detroit Lions you, we'll give it another year. Like you said, someone has to get fired. Now, the other one that I would say that stands out to me on this list would be a little bit of a surprise, but you never can rule out anything happening with the Washington Commanders, because not only is it something that is with their crazy owner, with all this other stuff coming up, you look at even the Jack Del Rio stuff that suddenly came up and became a national headline despite no one really anticipating that it would.
Yeah.
They got Carson Wentz at quarterback. If there's anyone who seems to be an offense or at least a coach killer for the most part, Carson Wentz has kind of been that guy, where he got Doug Peterson canned. You looked at how the Colts essentially just trashed him on the way out the door. Now he's going to be in a Washington team for the most part that is probably holding on to Rivera. If there ends up being kind of a tussle, if he plays poorly, maybe they end up having it where the owner, he goes to ownership, is like, hey, you got to get me a better coach. Like, something could happen with Carson Wentz. I think that right now, if I had to pick the coach to pick, I would pick Rhule. It's the easy choice for the most part. McCarthy, obviously a clear second choice. I think that you could say Rivera should probably be a little higher up, considering that Pete Carroll, like, the Seahawks chose him essentially.
Pete Carroll deserves to, like, just retire. Like, you cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you cannot.
That's
fire
the whole place.
Man.
At least
you
don't
want
to fire
him.
They're tied to that giant contract. He would have to give some money back. If I'm Pete, I look at that and say, "Oh, you mean I get paid, you know, like $10 million a year to put up whatever Seattle Seahawks product goes on the field? Cool. Like, I think that's a fantastic thing for Pete.
I want
to retire in his
old
time.
As hell.
Here's the thing. I've been saying it's very curious with the Bears because I am a person who has said I'm a Justin Fields fan. I've advocated. Yeah. I said that I think that he can be the guy. But if you're not going to offer a support system, that's clearly how quarterbacks end up losing or basically kind of you've got a couple of years to cement that in the NFL. I think that if you look at Kyler Murray, if he hadn't gotten DeAndre Hopkins when he did, there's probably a chance Arizona could have failed him in that regard. That's why I look at that and say the odds for him, for the most part, of the Bears just being like a train wreck that just is a mess defensively, a mess on offense, and they just say, all right, like we got to go ahead here, get an offensive guy in. If they could, I think that could be the one Steve Wilkes type of situation.
That's interesting, man. I had not considered that at all.
It could be, and it's most people have not thought that for the most part. But hey, if they go out week one, Justin Fields, he's got no weapons to throw to. He's behind a porous offensive line. They just got rid of Khalil Mack. Like, that could be one of those teams that ends up with a really, really high pick. I don't know if it'd be the number one pick necessarily, but, man, that's one of those spots that I've said it could be fun where you're like, oh, you get a 6-10 type of team. Justin Fields picks up a little bit. You see some things happening. Maybe they got the right guys in place. Or that could be just a dumpster fire because of just them having to reset everything.
Guys, if the question is who is going to get fired first, we talked about the Chiefs' schedule. Here's the Panthers.
Ooh, here we go.
The Saints. Maybe a coin flip, right? Cardinals, I think the Cardinals should win that game. I think the Saints should probably win, but let's say they're kind of coin flips. I could see either team could win.
I'll say this. Panthers have beaten the Cardinals with Matt Rule and Cliff Kingsbury every single year.
Yeah, I get
funny.
That.
Like, and it's not been close. That's the funniest part about all of it. Like the
Texas
Panthers
forever.
They blew out the Cardinals with Kyle Allen. They blew out the Cardinals with Teddy Bridgewater, and then they blew out the Cardinals with Cam Newton running in for two touchdowns and like the one healthy Christian McCaffrey game fantasy owners got. That would be really funny if the Cardinals like start out 0-3 and then play the Panthers. Like that would be kind of the moment of reckoning of like, all right, like this is going to be like, you know, this is the moment of reckoning. You got to beat Matt Rule because if you fall to 0-4, then that's when all bets are kind of off as far as for, you know, you don't want to have one of those like type of seasons where you get off to that poor start. And then like, you know, I said 0-17 is like maybe the one exception that would be kind of on the way toward one of those like type of seasons.
I'll say this. If Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter, nothing I say matters right now because I completely changed my opinion on this. If Jimmy's the starter, all bets are off. But if it's not Jimmy and if it's a Sam Darnold or whatever it is they have on the roster right now.
Matt Corral, baby. Let's go.
Whatever.
RPO is forever.
The Saints and the Cardinals, whatever. 49ers, Rams, Bucks, Falcons, Bengals, Falcons, Ravens, Broncos, like... If the question is what head coach is fired first, I just racked off 8 to 10 potential losses right there. So if it's the first, it's definitely Matt Rule. But I will tell you, in terms of who is guaranteed to get fired this year, Mike McCarthy's at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think I would agree with those. And that's where the topic said, odds to be the first coach. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I like the long odds for all of that as like a surprise one. Maybe they hold on a bit. Or even like you said, maybe it's like we get through week one, week two, and then they trade for Jimmy. Oh, well, suddenly, you know, all the people who are looking at least and took the Panthers for the most part of having a 1-15 or one, I should say 1-16 now type of season. And like we said, like the hardest part for Cardinals fans, at least, like even though my heart is happy that Arizona is going to have at least a primetime game, I'm still sad that Tom Brady had to come back to ruin a Cardinals team playing the NFC South that all of a sudden went from being, oh, these are some winnable games, you got the Bucks, you got all this stuff too, and all right, so now we're playing the Bucks on Christmas, and it's going to be during that Kingsbury second half of the schedule when obviously things seem to go downhill for Arizona the last couple of years.
Right.
My favorite value is probably Kevin Stefanski with Cleveland. Like, I could see him being a fall guy, just with if Deshaun's gone for the year and they go Jacoby Brissett.
No. I don't mean to interrupt, Chase. I love you to death, but think about this. They are not getting rid of any head coach right now because then they have to go, hey, do you want to come be the head coach of the Browns with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
No one. Kevin Stefanski is good enough.
Could you have a Jacoby Brissett while we hope that things get better with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski is good enough that no one is going to – they're not going to risk having that type of level of head coach. Who's going to join that team if they don't?
Oh, I have one guess.
You got a guess?
Brian Flores.
Brian Flores is not going to that team.
I had a funnier one, actually. Mm-hmm. Bill O'Brien.
Ooh. Yeah.
Bill O'Brien just comes back to Sean's like, no, I thought I escaped you. And then Bill O'Brien just comes walking back in through that door. He's like, hey, guys. So that would be the one, though. But no, you're completely right. I think that they've got like some of the most secure jobs in part because, like you said, like whatever happens with this thing, they're going to go down with the ship at least, or they're going to end up treading water until the Browns can prove that this was kind of the spot they had to make. It's not that you feel like that they should be secure, like you said, but like it's one of those places of you're not going to find anyone who's going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It'd be some other staffer who like would probably be like unwillingly almost promoted to head coach.
You're gonna get like a scout for the Jaguars. This is going to be the head coach. Like an assistant scout is the only person who will take the job.
They'll be running offensive play calls from Twitter. Like, all right, guys, if you want us to run power right,
press, just
you
know, four like, verts.
Retweet.
Just four verts back to back to back. Three plays in a row.
Retweet for screen pass. Favorite for four verts. All right, guess we're running four verts every play, guys.
There you go. Blake, what can the good folks check out from you at Revenge of the Birds and everything else going on your end this week?
Yeah, so I just went over out with Revenge of the Birds, just actually published an article on this about the Cliff Kingsbury, why I think that the odds are fake for that spot, because like he just got a 5-year extension. I think if you're going to talk about firing Cliff outside of some sort of enormous 0-17 train wreck, you got to be talking about 2023 with it. I talked about how he can overcome the three different ways that he has to kind of overcome the narrative, which is, you know, winning without D-Hop pretty much has to be shown, being able to kind of, I guess you can say, not just necessarily weather the storm down the backstretch, but just, you know, if he can go 5-4 down the backstretch with it being a really tough schedule, like again, the Bucks, the Broncos, the Chargers, Patriots and Monday Night Football, playing the Niners again in week 18, if they can overcome and kind of go 5-4 in the last 8, getting a boost in that middle of the schedule, then you're at least, all right, now you've proven you can at least not just collapsing down the stretch and then winning a playoff game. That's like the biggest three things, because right now, everything that's kind of been knocked on Cliff, he's at least turned the Cardinals around from where they were under the Steve Wilkes era. It just hasn't really hit all of the different buttons that people have wanted to see in a head coach taking over, you know, the likes of Kyler Murray, Hopkins, even when Fitzgerald was on the team. So it's kind of taking a realistic look and saying, hey, there's a positive outcome you can find of this for Arizona. There's also a negative outcome where you talk about like either it's the end of the beginning, like you get to see Cliff kind of get cemented, or it's the beginning of the end and we start talking about him continuing to be on the hot seat and maybe even hotter heading into 2023.
There you go. Evan, what about you? Anything you'd like to plug? We got Evan Sowards back on Twitter.com. I know, I just had to do that as we wrapped up. I'm sorry.
But okay, it's also, hey, as long as it was on purpose, I don't care.
Oh yeah,
I mean, if it was on purpose, I don't care. When it's an accident, then I'll just lose my mind. Follow me on Twitter. I guess only because I have my account back, and that's
fun. Have it back.
But you know, in general, you know, go ahead and jump onto your podcast app and give our boy Chase Tomas,
right,
a 5-star review.
People forget.
Chase Tomas. Yes.
I get Balake all the time, at least for all that. So it's not Balake Murphy 7, it's at Blake Murphy 7, at least for there all of like Cardinals takes and other weird memes. I love having photoshopping Cliff into Ryan Gosling scenes, at least is my new trend I'm gonna try for this year, so we'll see how that goes.
I'm a terrible
photoshopper, so if you like terrible photoshops, awful jokes, and Cardinals content, that's where you can find there.
There you go. Evan, Blake, thank you so much for making the time, and we'll have to check back in again soon. All right, y'all, that'll do it for the Tuesday, June 28th, 2022 edition here on the Chase and Most Podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all of our other great shows all across Blue Wire Pods. Insight with Chris Van Bleet. We got Spinsters with Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins. We've got The Long Shot with Duncan Robinson. Yeah, all kinds of great shows all across the Blue Wire Pod Network. So go subscribe and check out all of our great stuff at BlueWirePods.com today. If you enjoyed today's episode and you have not already done so, please make sure that you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if that is indeed how you listen to today's show and you have not already done so. As always, I appreciate you guys making the Chase and Most Podcast part of your daily listen. Whenever that is, I greatly appreciate you checking out the show and everything we got going on here on the Chase and Most Podcast and the Blue Wire Pod Network. So very, very excited for the week ahead. We got a jam-packed show for you guys tomorrow. Very exciting guest, Jared Dickey. Yeah, Tennessee outfielder who is extremely hard to get out at the plate, as a lot of SEC
teams found out this year, and they're going to find out more next year. So very excited. All kinds of great guests on the docket for the rest of the summer. And as we keep building for football season, the return of the NBA and all that good stuff. But all kinds of great stuff on the horizon here on the Chase Most Podcast. So thank you, as always, for making the Chase Most Podcast part of your daily listen, as I said. And new episode tomorrow, jam-packed shows for the rest of the week. Thank you, as always, and I will talk to y'all tomorrow. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.